Jaya Vishnupad, Srila Paramahansa Vakacharya Astatara Shishimad, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarada Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jaya, Anantra Gauti Sri Vaishnavarinda Ki Jaya, Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapurana Ki Jaya, Bhakti Vedanta Purport Ki Jaya, Samaveda Bhaktavarinda Ki Jaya, Gopremananda, all Lords Assemble the Bodhis, all Lords Assemble the Bodhis, all Lords Assemble the Bodhis, all Lords the Lotus Feet of Sri Guru and Sri Guru Anand. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Prayana Namaskritya. Naram Jiva Narottamam. Divim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayet. Naista Prayeshu Padreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Vacham Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. For the sight and stream of Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the personality of God of Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. By regularly hearing the Bhagavatam and rendering services unto the pure devotees, all that is troublesome in the heart becomes practically restored almost anew, and transcendental loving service unto the glorious Lord, who is praised with transcendental hymns, comes into being established as an irrevocable fact. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 4. Text 20 or 19? 20. You say 19, he says 20.
Okay, what about the 20?
Oh, sorry, it's 20.
20, yeah. Pregyaju samatha vakya.
Pregyaju samatha vakya.
Pregyaju samatha vakya.
Pregyaju samatha vakya.
Vedascha vara udrit. Vedascha vara udrita.
Vedascha vara udrita.
Vedascha vara udrita.
Vedascha vara
Itiyasa Puranam Cha.
Itiyasa Puranam Cha.
Itiyasa Puranam Cha.
Itiyasa Puranam Cha.
Panchamo Veda Uchita.
Panchamo Veda Uchita.
Sorry, Panchamo Veda Uchite.
Panchamo Veda Uchite.
Pragyaju Sama. Pragyaju Sama Tharva. Tharvapyam.
Pragyaju Sama Tharvapyam.
Vedascha vara udrita.
Vedascha vara udrita.
Vedascha vara udrita.
Vedascha vara udrita.
Itihasa puranam cha.
Itihasa puranam cha.
Panchamo veda uchite.
Panchamo veda uchite.
Prigyaju samatharvakya.
Prigyaju samatharvakya.
Prigyaju samatharvakya. Vedas chatvara udrita.
Vedas chatvara udrita.
Itihasya puranam cha.
Itihasya puranam cha.
Panchamo veda uchite.
Panchamo veda uchite.
Rigyaju sama tarava akta. The names of the four Vedas. Veda.
Veda.
The Vedas. Chitvara. Four. Udrita.
Made into separate parts.
Itihasa.
Itihasa.
Historical records.
Historical records.
Mahabharat. Puranam
cha.
And the Puranas.
And the Puranas.
Panchama.
Panchama.
The fifth.
The fifth.
Veda.
Veda.
The original source of knowledge.
The original source of knowledge.
Uchite.
Uchite.
Is said to be. Translation by Srila Prabhupada, the four divisions of the original sources of knowledge, the Vedas, were made separately. But the historical facts and authentic stories mentioned in the Puranas are called the fifth Veda. Please repeat, the four divisions of the original sources of knowledge, the Vedas, were made separately. But the historical facts
and authentic stories
mentioned in the Puranas,
are
called the fifth Veda. Tatra gvira tara pala samago yamani kave vaisham payana evako nishnato yajusammuta tatra thereupon Rigveda dara the professor of the Rigveda Pala the rishi named Pala Samaga that of the Samaveda
Jaimini
the rishi named Jaimini
Kavi
highly qualified.
Vaishampayana.
The rishi named Vaishampayana. Eva. Only. Eka. Alone.
Nishnata.
Well versed. Yajusham. Of the Yajurveda. Uta. Glorified. After the Vedas were divided into the four divisions, Pila Rishi became the professor of the Rig Veda, Jaimini the professor of the Sama Veda, and Vaishampayana alone became glorified by the Ajur Veda. Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada, the different Vedas were entrusted to different learned scholars for development in various ways. I'm going to read on a bit because
yes.
Atar vangira sammasit sumantu darunu muni itihasa purananam pitame ramaharshana atarva the atarva veda Angira Sam unto the Rishi Angira. Asit was entrusted. Samantu, also known as Samantu Muni. Daruna, seriously devoted to the Atharva Veda.
Muni,
the sage. Itihasa,
Purananam.
Of the historical records and the Puranas. Pita, father. May, mine. Ramaharshana, the Rishi Ramaharshana. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The Samantha Muni Angira, who was very devotedly engaged, was entrusted with the Atharva Veda, and my father, Ramaharshana, was entrusted with the Puranas and historical records. Is any water? In the Shruti Puranas also it is stated that Angira Muni, who strictly followed the rigid principles of the Atharva Veda, was the leader of the followers of the Atharva Vedas. Atharva Vedas. Taita nishayo vedam svam svam yashan anikara shishya shishya tachcheshir vedaste sangino bhavam te de iti all these rishaya learned scholars vedam the respective Vedas, Svam Svam, in their own entrusted matters, Vyasyan, rendered, Anikada, many, Shishya, disciples, Rashishya, grand disciples, Tachishya, great grand disciples, Vedate, followers of the respective Vedas. Shaktina, different branches. Bhavavan, thus became. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. All these learned scholars in their turn rendered their entrusted Vedas unto their many disciples, grand disciples and great grand disciples. And thus the respective branches of the followers of the Vedas came into being. Please repeat.
All these learned scholars, in their turn,
rendered their entrusted Vedas unto their many disciples, grand disciples, and great grand disciples. And thus the respective branches of the followers of the Vedas came into being. The original source of knowledge is the Vedas. There are no branches of knowledge, either mundane or transcendental, which do not belong to the original text of the Vedas. They have simply been developed into different branches. They were originally rendered by great, respectable, and learned professors. In other words, the Vedic knowledge, broken into different branches by different disciplic successions, has been distributed all over the world. No one therefore can claim independent knowledge beyond the Vedas. Om Agyanatam Randasya Jnanam Jana Salakaya Chaksuru Indalatam Nena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manomrista Tabidam inam bhutale Swayam rupa gadamayam Ditati sambhadantitam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Jalala Sri Vasare Gaur Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvasya chaham vidai sani vishto matta smarte jnanam apornam cha vedascha sarva aham eva vedyo vedanti krit veda vid eva chaham. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. So, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated within the heart of everyone as Paramatma. This is also called Chaita Guru. Chaita Guru. Guru means one who delivers from darkness. One who can deliver you from darkness. Just like we say, agyana, agyana. Agyana means darkness. So material world means darkness, agyana, timurandasya. This material world is very dark. It is a very dark place because there is ajnana. Ajnana timrandasya ghyangana salakaya. Chakshusho militam yena tasmai shi guruve namaha. So everyone is suffering on account of this darkness. Just like when there is darkness, there is great cause of anxiety, and there may be extreme accident also. In darkness, so many accidents happen because one cannot function. In darkness, one cannot function. One becomes useless. Just like if you're in an extremely dark room, you become useless. You can't do anything because you can't even find a door. You can't function. So the living entity cannot function properly in darkness. He has to move towards the light. Everybody wants to function in the material world. We have a certain function. Every living entity has a certain function. But unfortunately, he does not know what that function is. He thinks that the function is according to the dictation of the body. That is my function. That is the natural tendency. Animal also has that tendency. That the natural tendency is to function according to the body and the mind, false ego, polluted knowledge. So therefore Krishna is saying, Sarvasya, of all the living beings, that I am in the heart. Krishna is in the heart of all living beings. And he is directing the wandering. Just like everyone has conscience. You have a conscience. Animals do not have conscience. An animal can do harm, but cannot feel regret. You would never see in the instance of history an animal coming back to apologize. Listen. Where is there an instance where an animal, after biting off someone's leg, he comes back to give his apologies? I'm very sorry I bit your leg. And there's no question also of an animal performing any atonement. How can you get an animal to perform atonement, to atone for his vicious activities? It is not possible. Why? Because he has no conscience. So conscience is very important. We use the word conscience. What is the meaning of conscience? Conscience means direction from Supersoul. That is the meaning of conscience. That the Supersoul is directing. Therefore, when we do something bad, we feel bad. We feel bad because of conscience. Otherwise, why in the lower species like the uncivilized man, they don't feel bad. They think it's normal. That if you go into the jungle, there's some tribes, they eat people, cook them up, have them for dinner, shrink their head, make some ceremony or something. They don't think they've done anything wrong. They think it's all good fun. Because their conscience is not developed. Therefore, they are subhuman. Subhuman. So human life begins with civilization. If there is no civilization, there is no human. Just polished animals. Civilization generally is considered advanced from the wrong point of view. People think that advancement comes in aesthetic culture, the sciences, the arts, beautiful buildings, beautiful waterfalls, and so many external things. People think that this is cultured. So they see the aesthetics or the beauty of nature. So they try to imitate in so many ways. But this is not the real meaning of culture. Culture means cultivating spiritual knowledge, Veda. Culture is dependent upon the Vedas, because Krishna has introduced the Vedas into human society in order to elevate society. There is always a need of elevation, otherwise there is great risk of falling down into degradation. In the material world, there is a constant battle between the forces of material energy, sattva, raja, tamas. Sattva, rajas, tamati, guna, prakriti. They are the guna and prakriti. Guna means very strong force, like a rope, very powerful, as if one is tied up by ropes. One is tied up by ropes, then it's very difficult to get free, especially if there's three ropes. Sometimes if you tie someone up with one rope, then you may think, oh, he may sneak out. So let me use two ropes. And if you're really determined, you tie him up with three ropes. So that means there is less chance of him escaping. Similarly, in the material world, consciousness is always exposed to the modes. There's always a danger of being attacked by the modes of material nature. And therefore, because of this exposure, one has to be very, very careful. Because one, just as one may affect some disease in the material world, one is always cautious about affecting a disease. That's why people don't generally go near filthy, dirty areas. They keep away in case they might catch a disease. Just like yesterday, we were giving free food in the Shanti area. So I saw one person, he had a bag. He was pushing the children with a bag. In case he found he might catch something. So people are fearful they may catch something, some sort of disease, infection. But they are not actually aware that in the material world you also become infected. We're always becoming infected by the modes of material nature. These modes are constantly battling for superiority in nature. There is a constant battle going on in the mind, in the subtle plane. There is a constant battle. Sometimes we are overcome by passion. Then sometimes that passionate nature is degraded into ignorance. You find many cases in the history of mankind where a very nice person has become degraded down to a drunkard and useless fellow. There are many cases. In many cases of very learned and pious families becoming completely degraded. You can see this if you go to the Western countries. You see Indian families that have come from very good families, very good lineage. Their children are becoming very degraded with alcohol, chasing after sex life, going to movies and smoking and drinking, and they think it's all good fun. Our parents are boring. This is the real fun. Parents are always going on about this dharma, sanatan dharma and these things. But this is the real fun. Because this is called prayas, immediate pleasure. You can go, get intoxicated, enjoy life, have a good time. Life's short, have a good time. Later on, when we become older, we can take up this Hare Krishna, whatever it is. Whatever they want us to become, I don't know, what is it? Shakti worship or Krishna, they don't even know their own culture. They think it's some sort of stories that grandmother used to tell while sitting by the fireplace. She would tell a few stories about how this demon attacked and Lord Shiva killed him and these things. But better to go and watch Mad Max or something like that, what is it? Rambo. Better to see some real heroes. So this is the nature of passion and ignorance, mixture of ignorance and passion, because they do not know their culture. So it's very easy to become degraded because their conscience is not strong. They have no conscience. So So the older generation feel more embarrassed because they have some conscience that these things are not good. Even though sometimes they don't know why they're not good, but at least they have some conscience. So this conscience, this is actually buddhi. Buddhi yoga, the dhammi buddhi yoga mtam. Krishna says, I am there in the heart giving intelligence. Intelligence means the power of discrimination between matter and spirit. That is the meaning of intelligence. Unless one can discriminate what is matter and what is spirit, he cannot act intelligently. So what is the nature of knowledge? In the material world, there is the cultivation of mundane knowledge. There are many big institutions, universities, colleges, schools, so many different branches of knowledge. They have all been given to various scholars and academics and intellectuals to expound upon this theory and this idea and that idea and so many different branches. So there are practically hundreds and thousands of millions of different subjects to be discussed in this material world. So unfortunately in Kali Yuga, because Vedavyasa, he knew that Kali Yuga, there will be so many subject matters for hearing. So the great sage Vyasadeva saw anomalies in the duties of the millennium. This happens on the earth in different ages due to unseen forces in the due course of time. So within time there are unseen forces. In the material world there is also many, many forces which are there on the subtle plane. We see that society is always under some sort of shifting or moving influences. Various types of powers are going on. Just like we may see externally that we are making advancement in technology. But this technology is demonic. It is the work of the demonic energy within society. Because technology is another kind of pride. One becomes very proud that how I have been able to manipulate matter. So therefore, there becomes an artificial sense of achievement, artificial idea that somehow I have become powerful, I am able to utilize matter in a wonderful way. Just see my display. So this technological advancement is very, very demonic, because the idea behind technology is how to utilize matter so as that one can extract the maximum pleasure from the material world. One wants to manipulate matter, so bringing in this locomotion in matter, to make matter locomotive, just like matter is dead, just like iron. This is called the age of iron, Kali Yuga. So matter is dead. Iron is a dead substance. But if you make it into a locomotive, a train, then it can do so many things for you. You can have carrying passengers and luggage and so many goods around the world. That's why the British, they introduced these locomotive into India. And this also car, another thing, dead matter being manipulated so by so-called knowledge. So that now you have millions and billions and billions of cars running around all over the planet. Practically has become a planet of cars, isn't it? If someone was visiting from another planet, they would think that all these people are cars. The planet of cars. Of course, we know that with the advancement of technology, so many negative results are there. But to bring matter into some sort of life, so as that one can utilize it, that's the nature of mechanization. The mechanization of matter, therefore Kali Yuga is this advancement of technology, industry, mechanization, so as to bring maximum usage from dead matter. Matter is dead, earth. Just like Prabhupada gives the example. If you have a skyscraper building, one feels very proud, isn't it? What businessman would not be proud to look over the scenery and see his 40-story skyscraper? Because what is skyscraper? It's made from earth, fire and some water. Plastic and various things. But if you build it very high, then you can think that we have made so much advancement. Look, I'm big, big man, I have big, big skyscraper. So, if you see that gradually society is more and more absorbing itself in these useless activities of mechanistic advancement. So the great sage, who was fully equipped in knowledge, could see through his transcendental vision the deterioration of everything material due to the influence of the age. So what is that meaning of deterioration of everything material due to the influence of the age? So this is very important to understand that the deterioration of the material world, we see deterioration as some sort of material thing, that there is some deterioration, just like your clothes become deteriorated when you wear them too much. So that kind of deterioration we identify with. But actually the deterioration is there in consciousness. Consciousness is deteriorating due to too much emphasis upon the mundane. Too much emphasis upon ignorance and passion. And very little goodness. There is no emphasis upon goodness. There's a kind of artificial need, because people realize when there is goodness there, then one can work more cohesive, more, just like goodness is like the oil in the machine. Just like if you put oil in an engine, then the friction is less. When there's passion, there's a lot of friction. When there's ignorance, everyone's sleeping and drinking. So if you have some goodness there, be good to your neighbor, be nice, don't kill them or take away their wife, and don't steal all their money, don't cheat them, don't lie to them. So this is called morality amongst thieves. Just like when thieves rob someone or a bank, then they get together and say, now listen, we have to divide this fairly. I don't want anyone cheating, isn't it? So they become very moralistic, because they know that if we cheat each other, there's going to be more trouble and someone's going to lose out. So similarly in society, everybody wants to make advancement in a materialistic sense. So therefore they have these so-called moral laws governing society. You shouldn't drive on the right side, or you shouldn't spit at people, or you shouldn't hit them or curse at them or beat them up. But that knowledge is not really knowledge. That is not really morality. That is just simply another extension of materialism. It is not really knowledge. Because knowledge means to understand the difference between matter and spirit. Without understanding the difference between matter and spirit, there is no knowledge. There is only what is called seemingly knowledge. In other words, you can say that if someone can fly a 747 jumbo, they must be very sophisticated, isn't it? But what are they doing when they fly in the sky? They're watching stupid movies, drinking coffee and tea, and eating pieces of chicken and sheep, and simply falling asleep and doing nonsense. So they may be flying 1 mile, 2 miles high, but what are they doing up there? You see, what are they doing? Nothing. They're not doing anything. They're just wasting their life. So whether they're 2 miles up in the sky or whether they're living on the ground, it doesn't matter. That is not the point. The point is that what are they doing with their lives? They are simply wasting their lives, deteriorating of consciousness. So by the influence of this age, you could also see that the faithless people in general would be reduced in duration of life and would be impatient due to lack of goodness. In this Kali Yuga, nobody has any patience. Nobody wants to be waiting or somehow miss out on the fun. So Kali Yuga is a very lusty age. Therefore, everybody wants to cash in on the, materialistic mood of the age. That's why you find why so many people come to Western countries from other countries. Because they want to get in on the action. Prabhupada one time was saying, there's two types of crow. There's the old crow and the new crow. So when there's a lot of rubbish around, the old crow, he's been at it for years and years, so he just sort of stands on the side and he's not very interested. But the new crow, he's jumping everywhere. Everything he sees, he wants to peck at it and look at it and check it out, see if it can be enjoyed by him. So new crow, old crow. So the Westerners, they're becoming like the old crows, and people are coming from other countries like new crows. They're flying in. Just like many times you see rubbish heap, lots of crows are flying in. They're coming in waves to see what's there in the rubbish, isn't it? Have you ever been to these rubbish tips? You see new all the time, new crows are coming in. So this is like these airplanes coming into Heathrow, coming into New York, coming to LA. Everyone's coming in. Let me get in on the action. Let me see that if I can also carve out a situation here by which I can have a really good time, I can relax and be happy at last. So generally, nobody has the patience to understand what is the real meaning of life. Because spiritual life means that one should be situated in a very patient condition. Matter is not to be subjected by you, but you are to be subjected by matter. That is the reality of life. Everyone in the material world is being subjected by the three modes of material nature. So therefore, one has to surrender onto the controller of nature. So one must know, Krishna says in the Gita, one must understand what is matter, what is spirit, and who is the controller of both. You see? Who is controlling both? So just like a prisoner in the prison house, he can easily understand that the government is controlling, isn't it? He's very aware of that. Because his entire existence is dictated by the administration of the prison house. But someone who is sitting in the Bahama beaches or enjoying very much, he's not so aware, neither does he care who's running the country. Isn't it? Just like in this country, who really cares who's running it? As long as I get lots of money and get a good time and get out as quickly before it all blows up, then what does it matter? Let these people kill each other. As long as I get my money in my bank account in Jersey or Guernsey and get out of here quick or transfer everything. So this is a general idea. When people are enjoying themselves, they don't care about authority so much. The main thing is that what is the result of my existence here in the material world? But when someone is more subjugated to the enforcement of the governor, of the government, like the prisoner, then he's more humble, more patient. The prisoner can't go around getting excited because the same thing happens every day. So he has to be a little bit patient. And then he knows that 5 years' time, 10 years' time, I can apply again. Even if he's a big, big fella, sometimes in prison there's huge giants. And they're big crooks, murderers, killers. They're very patient. They sit in their rooms 22 hours a day. They're allowed out for a little stretch, back in again. So they have to be patient. Because their condition is they're very much under the power of material energy. So one who is intelligent, a devotee, he can understand that actually I'm very much under the control of material nature. And therefore, he is very patient because he realizes his condition. So therefore, Vyasadeva thus contemplated for the welfare of men in general in all statuses and orders of life. So there are so many divisions of consciousness. The three modes of material nature are creating 8,400,000 different consciousness. Now these 8,400,000 different species, they are again multiplied, subdivided into innumerable different types of consciousness. So within the human species there are 400,000. 400,000 means uncivilized and civilized, and there are very few civilized races. Very few. But because India is the seat of Vedic culture, so India is one of the last countries to become completely degraded. You can see that practically, because culture has been there for millions of years. So India is one of the last countries to become. So Vyasadeva, he entrusted his powerful disciples, great sages, to compile the various divisions of Vedas to attract and help all the different types of subdivisions and divisions of, just like there are the different Vedas. Originally there was only one Veda, because everyone was in the mode of goodness. So therefore, in the beginning there was one Veda. Later on, as it says here, the Veda is one. And the reasons for its divisions in many parts are explained herewith. The seat of all knowledge, or the Veda, is not a subject matter which can easily be understood by the ordinary man. There is a structure that no one should try to learn the Vedas who is not a qualified Brahmin. This stricture has been wrongly interpreted in many ways. But the Vedas are subjects by which subject which had to be explained even to Brahmaji by the Supreme Lord. So originally there was one Veda, and that was not written, that was only spoken. As society became more influenced, in the Satyuga, there was one Veda. Gradually, in the Treta, it became two. The Treta Yuga, Dwapara and Kali became four Vedas. But only in the Kali Yuga was it written down. So, the Vedas are generally not understood by people in the mode of passion or ignorance. The Vedas are written in various what is called seed verses. The Vedic codes, you can call them the Vedic codes. Just like that, Atatta Brahma Jignasya is the seed verse of the Vedas. But you can write volumes of books. One time, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he preached for over 6 weeks or 2 months on this one verse. So one verse you can speak for months if you are a learned sage. So therefore, the idea of the Vedas was that there's the original codes, and then they were broken down by great sages who were transcendental professors in Vedic science. Vyasadeva is the original compiler, but he handed over many of the different divisions. For instance, the Itihasis. The Itihasis are the various histories of the Mahabharata, of Great Bharat, Mahabharata. What is the meaning of Mahabharata? Bharat means Bharatvarsha. So the great history of Bharatvarsha. The Mahabharata was particularly written for people in Kali Yuga, because people in Kali Yuga, they like stories. Just like if you see Indian television, they like to watch the Mahabharata very much, isn't it? They like the stories. And also the Ramayana, they like very much the Ramayana and Krishna pastimes. So they like stories. They're not so interested in philosophy. In Kali Yuga, people are not interested in philosophy. Generally because they have very little inclination towards philosophy. They're too busy, their mind is absorbed in too many distractions, they're unlucky, they're lazy, their mind's always disturbed. And they're even not very clean in their habits. For instance, people don't get up early. If you want to study later, you have to get up early. But most people don't get up early. And by the time they get up and wash and everything, then they want to watch television and have some cornflakes and talk to the kids and take them to school. And that's their life. So if there's some nice story they can watch and it doesn't require them to do anything, they want to just have a look at, oh, this is very nice, look. This is very nice. I can enjoy nice stories. So Vyasadeva realized that at least let them become absorbed in these stories. And within the Mahabharata, he put in the Bhagavad Gita. So that amongst the stories, they would become philosophically attracted to the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita was particularly compiled for the lower class people, less intelligent, particularly Sudras and the women folk. So you can imagine how powerful the Vedas were, when the Bhagavad Gita could not even be understood by big, big professors. But the Bhagavad Gita is a very wonderful compilation because it's spoken by Krishna himself. So therefore, even though it is attractive to the Sudras and lower intelligence, still it is completely the highest knowledge at the same time. So this is one of the beauties of the Vedic literature, that Vyasadeva was very kind to the ignorant masses. And therefore he edited the Vedas in such a way, the different Puranas, he broke into 21 Puranas, so many for those in the mode of goodness, the Bhagavad Puranas for those in the goodness, then for those in the passion, he gave various Puranas for those in the mode of ignorance. So in this way, he broke down the Vedas so that everyone could have a bit of knowledge, certain codes, certain ways they behave, etc., etc. But then Narada told them that even though you have very wonderfully described the various divisions of Vedic knowledge, but you have not properly glorified Krishna. Therefore, you have done a great disservice to mankind. So, therefore, in order to explain the Vedas to all of society, in Kali Yuga, then Vyasadeva compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled by Vedavyas in order to glorify the beautiful Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this Bhagavatam is the, if you like, essence. It is the cream of all Vedic knowledge. Just like when there is milk, there is cream. The cream is the tasty thing. So, this is very tasty knowledge. Most knowledge is not very attractive in Kali Yuga. People are not attracted by so many things. But Bhagavatam is very attractive because we see that even the Malechas, the meat eaters, the low class from Western countries, they're all reading the Bhagavatam. So how is that? Because Vyasadeva knew that in Kali Yuga, this Bhagavat Purana is as brilliant as the sun, and it will be able to diminish the great darkness of this age. It is very powerful. Knowledge, the basis of knowledge is to destroy darkness. So therefore Vyasadeva wanted to destroy the darkness of Kali Yuga, and therefore he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, because only the Srimad Bhagavatam is powerful enough to destroy all the darkness of this ignorant age of Kali. Therefore this Bhagavat Purana is as brilliant as the sun, and that has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna for his own abode. Because when Lord Krishna went back to home, back to his own abode, therefore he took with him all of the different wonderful things such as religiosity, austerity, penances, everything. So there's very little left in Kali Yuga, and more degraded Kali Yuga will come. So therefore this Bhagavat Purana is particularly important, because Narada Muni, this Bhagavat Purana was compiled under the direction of Vyasadeva spiritual master Narada Muni as being the essence of all philosophy, knowledge. So therefore, if you read the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, practically speaking, there is no need of any other knowledge. Everything is there in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and Chaitanya Charitamrita. Everything is there. Okay, we better stop here. Any questions at all? Anyone? I can't hear you. How do we overcome lusty mentality? That nature of the material world is that always everyone is very lusty. That's the nature of this world. So what is lust? We have to study what is lust. What is the nature of Mr. Lust? Prabhupada used to call him Mr. Lust. Of course there's Mrs. Lust also, but Mr. Lust. So, lusty affair. Material world means lusty affair. And in the spiritual world there is love. So lust is the perversion of love. Wherever there is the absence of lust, lust comes in. You see this even in a material point of view. You get sometimes a family and they have so-called love. And when the love breaks down, then the greediness comes in, usually. Isn't it? As soon as the love breaks down, then the son wants to grab as much as he can. He wants to get rid of the father and mother, boot everyone out of the house, get whatever he can, and put the parents in an old age home, lock them up so they never see me again, and basically have a good time. So even in the material world where there's lack of love, trust, so many qualities, so then as soon as there is that breakdown, then automatically selfishness comes in. So selflessness and selfishness. Therefore, unless one can develop a love for Krishna and his devotees, a love for Krishna's service, then it is very, very difficult. One must, particularly in this age, develop a love for the chanting of the holy name. Because without this satisfaction of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, unless one gets this satisfaction, then the heart will not be peaceful. You see, the mind is always looking for shelter. So the reason the mind becomes lusty is because, on account of the influence of the modes, it thinks that there is some shelter. You see? Just like your mind, so many thoughts are coming through the mind. The mind is the conductor of affairs in the material world. And therefore, when the mind, some things are coming through the mind, that is natural. But as soon as you contemplate those things, then attachment develops. So lust is, as soon as there is attachment, then Krishna says lust develops. If there's no attachment, these things will just pass through. Isn't it? It's just like if you're working in a bank and you're counting money, no problem. As soon as you start putting in your pocket, problems begin. Isn't it? So it doesn't matter how much money is flowing through your hands, because it doesn't matter. You see sometimes in banks, big wads of notes, they chuck them to each other. Isn't it? One tiller, she's serving, she says, throw me over a few thousand, customer needs it. So they just chuck it over. They're not crying, they're not upset, they're not in anxiety. Isn't it? But as soon as they have to chuck their own money, worry, anxiety comes in, everything comes in. So similarly, the mind is like that. So many things are coming through. Let them come and go. They are coming. Krishna says they are like winter, summer seasons. They're coming, going. The mind is happy, then it's sad, it's up, it's down. Sometimes it's renown, sometimes it's lusty, sometimes it's working on intelligence, sometimes it's working on ignorance. So all of these things are coming through the mind. But the mind has to be in control by the intelligence. If the intelligence is strong, then the mind can be supervised. Because the mind is not an independent thing. The mind is controlled by the soul. The soul has given over authority of the mind to conduct its affairs in the material world. So if we have no affairs in the material world, we have no need to give authority to the mind. Isn't it? If we have no affair here, we have no affairs in the material world, then there's no need to give the control to the mind. The only reason we need to give authority to the mind is when we have some affair in the material world. Then we are allowing the mind to conduct through the senses. The mind is conducting its affairs. So the mind is, if you like, the what's the word to use? The Vedas use the example that the mind is there as the rain. Just like there's reins on a chariot, all going to the different senses. But if we have no affair with these senses, if we have no connection with the senses, then the mind has to be directed to a higher thing, and that is the service of Krishna. If the mind is directed to the service of Krishna, then these senses are absorbed in that service, then Krishna says, I give protection. I give protection. So, Rishikesha Kesha Sevana. Rishikesha means one who is the master of the senses. Krishna is the only master of the senses because he created them. You are not the master of your senses because you didn't create them. How can you be the master? You didn't create them, neither can you control them. You can't control the tongue, you can't control the genitals, you can't control the mind. Because these are pushing agents, very forceful. But if the mind is absorbed in the service of Krishna, then Krishna automatically protects his devotee. He says to Arjuna, you declare a bully, Arjuna, my devotees will never be vanquished, they will never be overcome, they will never be destroyed by any force, because I am there. Because I am there. Just like Prabhupada gave an example, he was on the train with his father, about 5 years of age. So the conductor came, and the conductor was having some fun. So he came to Prabhupada, he said, give me your ticket. Just like sometimes a conductor, where's your ticket? In a very official way. So Prabhupada was shocked. Oh, I don't have any ticket. He's five, he was bewildered. But then he remembered, my father is there. So automatically he relaxed. My father will take care of this business. It's not my word. So similarly, Krishna says, surrender unto me. I will take care of all these businesses because I am Krishna. I am God. You are only a tiny jiva. You are very insignificant. So if you try to sort out these things, you will get in a mess. Isn't it? I will take care. Just like if you work for the government, they will protect you. If you work for a police force, if one policeman is attacked, 500 policemen will come immediately, isn't it? There's no question, they will come. Whatever resources they have to muster up, even they'll bring in helicopters, gunships, the whole army, the whole government will come to their side because they're under the shelter of government. So when you take shelter of a very powerful force, then there is substantial protection. So therefore, one who takes shelter of me, Krishna says, I will protect. Do not fear. Don't be in any anxiety about Mr. Lust. I will chase him away. You see? But if you're not taking shelter of Krishna, then this lusty affair becomes very powerful. So at any moment, if you look away from Krishna, Maya is there. Prabhupada said it's like a razor's edge. Spiritual life means razor. As soon as you look away from Krishna, then immediately, all these lusty affairs come. So sometimes you see someone, even who's very advanced in spiritual life, even Roma Harshana, is a good example, Rama Arjuna. He was also one of Vyasadeva's very, very powerful rishi and a great disciple, a friend of Vyasadeva actually. But he was a little proud. So when Balaram came to Namasharanya, all of the sages and devotees, they all got up and paid obeisances, offered respects to Lord Balaram. But Rama Arjuna, he, because he was sitting on the Vyasasan, being put there by all the sages, he didn't get up. So Lord Balaram, because Lord Balaram also is not very predictable. So he became angry. Who is this fella? He could understand Lord Balaram that in normal circumstances it's true. The seater, one seated on the Vyasasan does not have to get up. But when the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes, that's a different affair. So he felt that this fella has offended me. So he killed him. He picked up some kusa grass and killed him. So you have to be careful with when you're dealing with God. If you become a little proud, he can reject. You see, he's not under the dictation. You can say that, oh, the sages of the Namasharanya, they became very shocked that here is our, they had installed Namasharanya, what's the name of it?
Ramaharshana.
They'd installed him for the full 1,000-year jagna. So they'd given him all benedictions. And yet Balaram just knocked him off the Vyasasan with a piece of grass. Get out. Then Lord Balaram felt a little, when they appealed to him, he felt, oh, maybe I did wrong. Of course, Krishna can't do wrong. Balaram can't do wrong. But because he was pretending in humans, as human beings, then he said, oh, I'll bring him back to life again. Sorry about that. But the sages, not wanting to offend Balaram, because he's Srimad, they said, no, let be what's be. But then Lord Balaram said, well, what I'll do is I'll install Supa Goswami, his son, on his behalf. So he, that is where we get the, if you like, the recitation of Bhagavatam by Supa Goswami. Some of these things are very difficult to understand. But the point being is that one should be very careful never to transgress etiquette. In Vaishnava culture, etiquette is very important. So therefore, even if one is a very so-called advanced devotee, a very big devotee, he should always remain very humble at the lotus feet of the of Krishna and his devotees, so as not to commit any offense. Otherwise, he can immediately be propelled out of the association. So Prabhupada always said, don't become proud when you're dealing with Radha and Krishna. Because very quickly you can find yourself out in the wilderness. We are there by the causeless mercy of the great Vaishnavas. By their mercy only, one can be given such opportunity to serve Krishna. So if one becomes a little proud in that service, that is very dangerous. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya gave that example. One should always be more humble than a straw in the street, more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige. Then one can have shelter of Krishna. Otherwise, if little pride is there, then just like a seed, pride is like a seed, it grows and grows and grows. And then after a while, one starts to commit Vaishnava aparat, Guru aparat, Krishna aparat, everything is lost. Of course it will come later on, but at least for now it will be stopped. So similarly, if one is not very, properly situated in the shelter of Krishna, then sometimes these lusty activities become, again, reactivated within the heart. But then if one sincerely sticks to the lotus feet of Krishna, then all of this lust will go away. Sometimes a question of time also. You can't expect that in one moment all lust will disappear. Lust has been there for billions and billions of lifetimes. So it's not going to go away in 5 seconds. one has to actually realize that, just like we're on one morning walk with Prabhupada. So Prabhupada said it's just like when a child is learning to walk, the first business is one step in front of the other. And then gradually, when that one foot is firm, then you move the next foot, the next foot. So spiritual life also is a gradual purification of the heart. The main thing is that one should always stay in the association of devotees and be very careful of behavior. Then there is every chance of, at least gradually, if not quickly, obtaining success. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam Aparanam Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.